listening to Inclusive AF with Jackie Clayton and Katie Van Horn.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Inclusive AF podcast. I'm Katie Van Horn.
And this is Jackie Clayton. Hello.
Whoop, whoop. So it is Wednesday, and we are on like a blitz this week of recording. So
I'm kind of sick of talking to you, actually, to be honest. Keep it at 1000.
Yeah, keeping it real. We love each other a lot this week. But we're very lucky because we have great guests that are coming on and chatting with us. And today is no exception. So today we have Natalie Egan with us. And Natalie, would love for you to introduce yourself, share a little bit about yourself, and then we'll jump right in.
Sure. So awesome. Hi, everyone. My name is Natalie Egan. My pronouns are she, her, and hers. And I'm the CEO and founder of a company called Translator, where we build diversity, equity, inclusion training and analytics technology for corporations, schools, and nonprofits. I'm really excited to be here. I can give a little bit more background right now, or you can like kind of try and work that in to questions, but it's up to you all. You're the host.
Up to you.
Yeah, share what you'd like to share. So I know a little bit of your backstory, but would love for you to share with the listeners a little bit about your backstory.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've been starting businesses since I was a little kid. I think I had my first like official real revenue generating business when I was like 8 years old. But I've always been trying to like solve problems and help people and make a little bit of money along the way. I had two older brothers that were like in the workforce when I was like looking up to them, and you know, I wanted to make money, so that all kind of came together for me. And you know, I've been stuck with this like entrepreneurship gene or bug or whatever you want to call it you know, since I was a little kid. So the company I'm running today called Translator, it's my second like major like venture capital backed startup, tech startup. I had a company prior to this, prior to my transition as well, called PeopleLinks. It was also an HR technology. It was similar in a lot of ways to what we do today, but it was designed to kind of change people's hearts and minds and behaviors and do it at scale. I called it change management software. But it was that company was basically, think of it as like social media guidance software. So it's designed to show people what to do on social media at scale and make it measurable, scalable, and repeatable. So it was a rules-based system that allowed for companies to say, here are the best practices I want my employees to do on, you know, for example, LinkedIn. And it would sort of score their profile and score their activity and score their network, and then, you know, guide them to improve those based on benchmarks that were set. And anyways, that company had a great rise and it had a great fall. And, you know, I ended up, long story short, I ended up getting fired from that company after it came crashing down by the CEO that I put in. And so that was a hard pill to swallow. But, you know, when I thought my life could get no worse, and I, you know, my marriage had fallen apart in the background, like this big company that I was building had blown up. That's when I figured out my truth and my identity, my real identity. I had been bearing this under layers of masculinity for years. I was afraid of it. I sort of became more masculine to try and hide it. I ended up coming out as a transgender woman in 2016, and I always tell people I experienced bias, discrimination, hatred for the first time in my life, you know, at age 38, you know, as a cognitive adult. Was a hugely eye-opening experience for me. It still is. I'm constantly learning. But I decided at that time, you know, and there's a lot more to this story, obviously, but I decided at that time that I was going to, I was like, this is a real problem, right? And if you know entrepreneurs, we like problems. And this is like the biggest problem I had ever seen. And I didn't have anything to lose at that point because I had pretty much lost everything. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to build technology, you know, to help us understand each other better. Like that was the original idea. And sort of the, you know, the thesis or the question that we had is like, can we use technology to scale empathy? That was the idea. And what we pretty quickly realized was like, you can't understand yourself, or sorry, you can't understand other people better until you understand yourself, right? Until you understand your own identity. And I was sort of a walking case study of that. I had actually figured that out on my own and realized there was all this research backing that up. So at the core, our technology sort of became self-awareness technology, and it's grown considerably. It's evolved quite a bit since then. But at the very core, it's about helping people understand their own identity first. And that becomes sort of a gateway for people to learn about other people's identities and other people's, you know, differences and what makes us unique. And yeah, it's been quite a journey. It has not been easy. But I'm really excited to be here with you all today. And, you know, thank you for the opportunity to share.
Thank you for sharing. And there's so much to unravel. I do want to say you're being a little humble because you are not just the CEO of Translator. You are CEO of the award-winning Translator product because you did win an award when we were at HR Tech. And that's awesome. You know, you can add that now. You can add award-winning.
thank you for bringing that up. And it's funny, that's how we met in a lot of ways, was was at HR Tech, which was an incredible experience for us. And, I've been going to HR Tech and conferences like it for a long time. I've been pitching at conferences for a long time. And, you know, we've never won an award like that. I've gotten some awards for like my, you know, like trailblazing award, right? For being this like transgender, like tech CEO, you know, that stuff's awesome. But, you know, we had never gotten that kind of recognition as a company. And it's timely. I mean, and it makes sense. We actually just did a product release over the summer, like earlier in the summer, that has really changed things for us. And I think made us much more of a platform that people see. Like, I think people thought of us as like a DEI point solution before, and certainly are addressing DEI. But I think that the what you saw and what everybody saw at HR Tech like opened up people's eyes to like what this could be, and you know how DEI is sort of integrated into all the different business functions. You know, talent management, you know, customer service, sales, you know, performance management, leadership development, like all of that has to have DEI baked into it. And that's what this kind of product release enables for us is to go far beyond just sort of like DEI as a training, like it's a DEI specific thing. It's actually integrates DEI into everything. And I think people saw that and it was an amazing experience. I'm not gonna lie to you, I think we should have gotten first place. We got second. I'm pretty competitive, but you know, I always believe in what we're doing. So it's, you know, and it was hard for years when we weren't placing. I was like, why don't people get this? Mm-hmm. But it's an exciting time and we're starting to really scale and good things take time. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things, you know, just the evolution at HR Tech, you know, a little sidebar here, you know, I've talked to, you know, the folks that run HR Tech and, you know, some of the folks that have participated for years and years. And my question has always been like, okay, so where's the D&I space or where's the, you know, who's focusing on this? And it has been such a evolution that it's now kind of been brought to the forefront of, oh no, everyone needs these tools, needs to know how to, you know, actually do this work in the right way in their role in organizations. So it is very telling that you all were in the pitch contest and then also up, you know, one of the winners, like that's huge. And I love that. And I want to step back because the last time, and I know we talked about this for a few minutes, the last time I had looked at your tool, one of the things that you're doing, which I thought was just really, really interesting, was around the walk of privilege, but doing it from a technical space. And I think you all still do that. And so I would love for you to just share a little bit about the why behind kind of how you thought through that and why that was changed and how you evolved that with technology.
Yeah. So So yeah, you know, just in terms of like how we got here. So my previous company, which I had mentioned earlier, PeopleLinks, started off as a training and consulting company. I worked for LinkedIn, and I left LinkedIn in 2008, which was early, you know, relatively speaking. I left LinkedIn to start a training and consulting company to help companies use LinkedIn. And it was just a training company. And, you know, pretty quickly, our clients were saying, you know, we need to scale this to hundreds of thousands of employees. Like the training that you just gave to 50 people, we have 50,000 people. And we were sort of scratching our head, like, how are we going to do that? And one of our clients, which is KPMG, big company, said, we want you to build a product and we want you to use LinkedIn's APIs. For non-technical people out there, sort of like a little portal into LinkedIn to build an app. We want you to use LinkedIn's APIs to build this as an app. And so we sort of accidentally pivoted that company, that training company, to become a product platform that could scale to hundreds of thousands of users. LinkedIn in the end did not like what we were doing. That's why that company came crashing down. So we got shut down. This time around, we were much more intentional about our strategy. And so, you know, this thesis I had, like, how do we scale empathy through technology? How do we change people's hearts and minds and behaviors for DEI? So we started to study DEI. And I had this like kind of little idea one night. I was like, why don't we pretend to become a DEI training and consulting company? And we're going to study this and we're going to look for opportunities to insert technology. And then we're going to build a product, and then we'll slowly kind of convert that training company to become a platform company. I was hoping it would happen faster than it did, but that's really what we've done. And so we started off, and I had never been to a DEI training. So I hired some DEI trainers and I closed some training deals. Like I just kind of used some relationships in my network to get to some decision makers at some companies and said, you know, just try this. And I sat back and I studied the whole thing. Like, why did they buy? Why did they not buy? Like, what was the implementation like? What was the process? What had to happen beforehand? What happened during the event? You know, what happened afterwards? Did they buy again? Why not? Like, everything. I studied everything. And I realized pretty quickly there was lots of opportunities to insert technology to, you know, make it better. And one of the things we realized is that DEI trainings in particular rely on exercises. Good DEI trainings have exercises built into them to help people generate self-awareness, to like help them connect with other people. So it's not just, you know, curriculum that's, you know, fire hosed at you or one way. It's, you have these interactive exercises, but they were primarily done on paper or, you know, or stick a sticky note on the wall if you agree with a statement, or turn to your neighbor and finish this sentence three times. Or step forward if both your parents went to college, right? Which is the walk of privilege. That was one of the early ones that I saw. And I was like, this would be so much better if it was an app. You know, like that was just like obvious to me. I was like, and you know, the walk of privilege, if people aren't familiar with it, you know, if I was facilitating it the old way, I'd line everybody up shoulder to shoulder and I'd read statements like step forward if both your parents went to college, or step backwards if you have a physical or invisible, disability, or visible or invisible disability. And it's a really powerful exercise, but it's also really highly problematic. You know, you're shaming people and outing people for their privilege. Like it's an ableist exercise that assumes you can stand and walk, and, you know, people aren't very honest because it's like, I don't want to step forward anymore. Like people are looking at me, and then there's nothing to show for it afterwards. Like there's no data, there's no follow-up. So we digitized that. So that was one of the early exercises that we built. And you know, it was still done in person at the time, you know, but instead of getting up and standing in a line, you logged into a web-based app that's totally anonymous. It's just you put in like a unique 4-digit PIN on a website and it drops you in, and you swipe forward if both your parents went to college. You know, you swipe backwards if, you know, you are X, Y, and Z, right? Whatever the questions are. And that became wildly popular. I mean, it was a much better way to do the exercise. People were more honest. And we were collecting a ton of data that we could help companies organizationally understand privilege and marginalization, as well as the participants, in a whole new way without shaming and outing people. And some people still felt shame and they still felt outed, but that's like more of like, sort of something that we should examine, right? Like that's more part of like, it's like, why are you feeling shame right now? Like, we're not actually shaming you. Like, it's just, you feel shame. Like, let's look at that. Let's unpack that, right? Or you feel, you know, this way or that way. Like, let's take a look at that. But, you know, because it's anonymous, it allowed for us to do it in a wholly different way. And that became the IP of our whole platform. And so, yeah, now that's just a piece of a much bigger puzzle. But it's a great, you know, part of the platform. It's kind of like how we got here in a lot of ways. And yeah, we're just sort of digitized those, the workflow that was traditionally analog. I mean, you know, even like people raising hands to ask questions, I thought was completely bonkers. Like I was studying this one of our early trainings, and one of the our first facilitators we hired handed out 3.5 by 5 like index cards with a pencil to like everybody in the audience. And I said to him, I said, why are you doing that? And he said, in case people want to ask like, you know, anonymous questions. And I was like, so they write the question down and then what? Like, and he's like, well, in this case, they'd have to hand it down the row because it was like a movie theater style thing. And I'm like, how many people actually do that? And he said, well, not that many. I said, you know, have we ever thought about why? And, you know, it's because people don't want to write, you know, they don't want to write it down, like hand it down the line. What if somebody recognizes it, you know, reads it, like there's all kinds of issues. And then I was like, the bigger picture is, well, what if people don't want to raise their hand at all? Like, or we're running out of time, or, you know, there's all kinds of issues. So we had, you know, quickly built the ability to ask anonymous questions to the facilitator only. So like the rest of the audience couldn't even see the question, but it would get sent to the facilitator on a smartphone and on a totally 100% anonymous. And so it was just like little things like that, that we started to like build and build and build and incrementally build. And, you know, in the beginning, it was really just like the walk of privilege and the ability to ask anonymous questions. And then we started just add more features. And eventually we have a whole SaaS platform that we can license directly to corporations. And, you know, the new version, and I know I'm like going off on this, but like the new version actually has like these, like this guidance system in it that's designed to help the facilitator facilitate. So it's like, you know, think of it as like training wheels, or the analogy I really like to use is like when you go bowling, you know, and they put those bumper lanes in, you know, it's like, that's kind of like, the idea with our platform is like anyone can facilitate, right? Now, not everyone should facilitate, but like anyone that wants to facilitate a session could use our facilitator dashboard to facilitate a live training, and that, you know, you no longer can throw a gutter ball. Like you may not throw a strike every single time, but you can't throw a gutter ball anymore. Like that's kind of what the platform does, and it's cool.
How much do you understand the future of finance? I'm Jim Roos, a top 10 banking influencer and host of the podcast Banking Transformed, where we dive deeply into the rapidly evolving world of banking and financial technology. Join me as I interview industry experts, thought leaders, and innovators as they unravel the latest banking trends, disruptions, and game-changing technologies reshaping the world of finance. Redefine your understanding of the banking ecosystem. Subscribe now to Banking Transformed, available wherever you get your podcast, and now available on YouTube.
Awesome.
I like that you said that. Because that's kind of what we're finding. I think as we study along this journey, we're all starting to learn more about what's working, what's not working, what can we do with various groups, all of these different things that can come up. And I love that it helps the facilitator, just because sometimes it's just exhausting, right? So it's nice that somebody else can take it and you can feel confident in the content that's getting passed along, because that was always the worst. We've all been in trainings where they had like 2 facilitators, and then it's like, okay, now it's David's turn. And everybody's like, oh, David's back. Because it was going to go in a completely different direction, the pace, the timing, the content, how they answered. And so I think that's really neat. And I think that's really a thoughtful tool that's needed.
And I think the piece that is so important is just the safety that you're creating with that anonymity. Like, as much as we like to think that we are evolved or that organizations are evolved, having a space where folks can ask a question that they would go, absolutely no way am I going to raise my hand or write it on a card or any other thing. Having the safety of, I can ask this question and not feel the shame of asking or not feel like I'm outing myself or whatever that might be. Because I think that comes up, I mean, it's happened a ton of times when I'm in training that like after the class, hey, I didn't want to ask this question, but what about this? Or what about that? And you're like, oh, I wish you would have asked because everyone probably needed to hear this answer. But having that tool kind of in place to help with that is huge. Tell me about the ESG piece, because I think that's another piece that is interesting about what you're doing. So would love to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, so ESG, environmental social governance, is driving a lot of the, there's sort of like multiple layers to the value proposition, but it's, ESG is become a big driver of like why people, are looking for a platform like ours that can, create data and metrics so that they can report back to their board of directors, to report to Wall Street, to report to their investors, and ultimately back to the market, right? To their customers, their internal constituency, their employees, to say like, this is how we're benchmarking and this is what it looks like over time. And, ESG is really kind of the Wild West right now in terms of like, it's actually like, a lot of it is sort of being made up like as companies go, right? They're like, we don't even really know what to report, but we know we have to report something. So what do we have? And so our tool is surfacing tons and tons of data. In fact, 98% of our clients that have been using our full platform for more than a year are using our data to report ESG metrics to their board, to the investors.
What kind of metrics should they report on, or what is best practices along that lines?
I mean, at the most basic level, like, it's like you can report activity, right? Like, and like that is, it sounds very basic, but it is. And it's the idea that you are reporting to your board of directors or whoever the governing, entity is, to say, we are doing this and we're doing it on a regular basis. We're committed to it. We have a program in place. Like that's like super basic. That's like table stakes. As you grow from there, there's insights that come out of the platform. Like, 60% of our employees have been diagnosed with a mental health, diagnosis. That's the kind of thing that, while the metric itself is really just a piece of data, it's like, now what are we doing about it? Right. So because of this realization, we have implemented a partnership with NAMI, with the National Association of Mental Illness. Right. Like, those are the types of insights to say, like, here's what we found, and then here's what we did about it. And we usually, our clients kind of roll them into like three categories or three insights, where it's like, this is what we're reporting up. We've got a program in place. We're collecting these metrics. We have tons of metrics, like eye candy data. But like, what we're seeing that's important out of that data, that's helping us change culture and ultimately drive retention and engagement with, this particular group of people, like, that's what the board wants to hear, is like, how are we improving diversity recruiting referrals, right? And what's interesting is that, like, and I can't remember the exact number off the top of my head, but it's like high 70s% of our employees, of our clients, are experiencing an increase in diversity recruiting referrals, after using our program for more than a year. Now, does that mean it's absolutely attributable to us? Like, not necessarily, but it's part of a bigger picture. So that's another metric that they're reporting. But people definitely do not divert, people of diverse experiences, diverse backgrounds, diverse communities, don't refer their peers unless they feel seen and heard and valued and respected and, cherished. And like, that's just not happening, right? As a trans woman, I have a huge network of trans and gender nonconforming people I could refer to work for the company that I work for some big company. I could refer them, but I'm not going to, unless I feel like this is a safer space for them, right? Like, it's better than where they are. And I'm judging that based on my lived experience. So if the company is acknowledging my lived experience, which is a big part of this ESG reporting, to say, this is the diversity of our organization, these are their metrics, this is how we're changing things, and trans and gender nonconforming individuals have a different lived experience. So we are implementing things like, you know, policy changes around insurance, bathrooms, we're doing trainings, you know, we're putting pronouns everywhere, right? One of our clients, you know, the CEO of the company now tells people their pronouns when he gets on stage, right? That's just like something that he's now doing. And the amount of incoming referrals and inbound, like the number of trans and gender nonconforming people applying for jobs at this company has gone up. It just has, right? But everybody's doing it, right? It's not just in their email signatures. It's when they meet people, right? Like that really sort of basic function is changing that culture. You know, it gets down to language. Like, how do we help them change their language? So, you know, kind of going back to the original question, like around ESG, I mean, you know, it is a very important factor in changing these companies, and we have a lot of work to do, right? There's a long road ahead of us. Like, I see change at the top of these organizations. Is it trickling down to the front lines yet? No. Are people still being hurt? Yes. Like, you know, is there like, we have a lot of work to do, but like, this foundationally will be changing companies, you know, culture. It takes 5-10 years though for some, especially some of these companies.
And there's other pieces of it. I mean, there's like, when you look a lot among the whole spectrum, it might help, maybe it's helping people be more inclusive, but then what is the impact on people from underrepresented communities, right? Like, I don't have 5-10 years for you to figure this out, you know? And there's like being able to look at the metrics and making sure that you're seeing that what you measure is so important, especially when there are people that don't want to like verbalize what's actually happening. So there's all this whispering, there's all this assumption of what's going on as we're making these changes. And in looking at the numbers and saying like, what else was going on? What was happening at this time? Was this a fundraising year? Was this, was there a change in management, or what put those as part of it? And it's just good to continue, because a lot of people, it seems like, I've talked to a lot of various companies, I'm sure we all have, some people, they might say that they're committed to diversity, equity, and inclusion. They might even have the money to put behind diversity, equity, and inclusion. But then when you start getting to the metrics and the reporting, that people just like want to turn their heads, like they don't want to know, like, don't tell me everything that you need to know. But we have to start setting guidelines of what's important for people to know. Or else, you know, who said it? It was like, if you don't measure it, it doesn't exist. And so I'm glad to hear about that evolution within the product as we're seeing that evolve and become most important. I wanted to ask another question in regards, you know, kind of about about what's going on with the platform, but I just wanted to ask, what's on your roadmap? Like, what's on your benchmarks? What's coming next? Is there anything else around the corner as you continue to build the platform and from the lessons you're learning?
Yeah, so I think probably I sort of referenced this a little bit, but the big shift for us was, I think, you know, for a long time, and we knew this would be the case, we looked like a training company with a product. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were incubating a SaaS platform that we could license out directly to corporations so that they could self-implement, or we could license it to third-party training companies so they could use it with their clients. And so we've been in that sort of process of building that. And, you know, like I said earlier, this summer, there was kind of a big product release that makes that reality. It also fundamentally changed our kind of go to market in a lot of ways, because we went from being sort of a DEI point solution, like where it was, you know, sort of DEI focus with service, you know, and a product, but with services wrapped around it, to becoming more of a platform where DEI is a use case. Now, DEI is a category, right? So think of DEI as a category with inside of our platform. Now we can add other categories like talent management, like customer service, like, you know, financial literacy, right? Like that's literally a category that we're adding. And in particular, it's going to be focused on empowering, you know, and, you know, the prosperity of women or, you know, and folks identified as women, you know, through for with financial literacy. That isn't going to be a sort of smaller category, but it will be a new category for us. But it has an inclusion, you know, DEI layer to it. Mm-hmm. So each one of these content categories that we bring in will have a DEI layer to it because we're kind of having, we'll be governing and, you know, the content that comes into the platform. So it's not going to be like, you can't just put any content in the platform, but we are going to be opening it up to third-party partners, training companies, to bring their IP, their training content, which they've been doing training trainers to deliver the content. Now they can put it in our platform and they can license that directly to corporations and they can turn their own employees into trainers with that content. And so kind of what's next is adding more content categories. So talent management is probably the next big category that we're going to add, which is, you know, you got to have DEI with that. So we're actually solving a much bigger problem for all the DEI practitioners out there because we're taking it from like, hey, we have to do a DEI training to DEI is integrated into all of our training. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the like the secret sauce behind this. And, you know, it's what's going to help change the world, which is what we set out to do when we started it. So that's kind of like, I think the big thing, you know, to get a little bit more technical, and you know, for anybody that's out there that's listening to this and goes like, I don't get it, I want to see it, like, you know, I'll give you my contact information and then I can actually show it to you. But the facilitator dashboard, and Jackie, you kind of referenced this, has an AI built into it, artificial intelligence, that is designed to create a digital co-facilitator that helps the live facilitator facilitate. So if you're familiar with that term, which is an awful marketing term, it's like, I don't know, it's called deep fake technology, right? So it's like it's a.
Yeah, we need to work on that.
Yeah, somebody, I like, it's like awful, right? But it's an AI. It's a human looking being. It actually was a human at one point, but they've been mapped on a green screen and they move their arms around and like move their mouth around. And then we can, you know, basically load up scripts and have them present, you know, part, if not a majority of the content in a training. So it's actually kind of an 80-20 rule. So in any given training, the AI delivers about 80% of the training, right? Which is the more transactional content that just needs to get said. It needs to get said clearly and consistently. We do not need to deviate from this content. The live facilitator, on the other hand, is handling the interactive components where it's like, oh, Katie, that's a really great question. Tell me more. Right. Like, and by bringing in the AI, it's not as exhausting. Like Jackie, that's one of the things you said earlier, like it's not as exhausting to deliver a training because the trainer can actually be more present for the people that are there because they're not like trying to remember the script and make sure they said it correctly. So the AI delivers about 80% of the content that's built, that's live, it's out there. This product release that we're coming up with, just because you asked like what's next, which is pretty cool, is there's actually this sort of like little, like almost like think of it as like a teleprompter, like a hidden teleprompter that's built into the platform so that it actually kind of tells the live facilitator what to say and when to say it, because they still have a role. Now, this is just to say, like, this is what you should say here. And, you know, it's got a little timer to keep you on track. So that's what we're launching next. But what's really cool is that in the future, not this first version of it, but in the future version, we'll have like natural language voice processing on the facilitator's talk track. So we're not recording what the audience is saying, but we are recording what the facilitator is saying through their microphone. And it allows for us to analyze what they said. Were they, you know, did they stay on track? Were they on time? Did they mumble? You know, did they follow the script? And that way you get, you know, much deeper look of, you know, analytics at your trainers. So you might be, let's say you're a big company and you've got 5, maybe 10 employees using the translator platform to train employees. You can now look at that and say, oh, I'm going to compare Jackie to Katie. And, you know, Jackie's, you know, she's going off
script. Yeah, I'm going to have to stay away from translator when that happens.
She's a wild card. But, you know, it's just more insight, and you know, and maybe Jackie's going off script, but maybe she has better ratings. Like, we don't know, right? Like, that's, but to be able to rank and rate your trainers and do it much more cost effectively, like, this is pennies on the dollar compared to the cost of traditional live training, which is about $250 per person per training session. That is industry standard. With our platform, it's like $3 per person per training. So it's magnitudes of order, you know, in terms of the cost effectiveness, scalability, and you still get a better product, better quality product, and you get better training, and you get data, and you get retention engagement of the trainers. The trainers love it. They like, you give this tool to people who are passionate about a topic like DEI or talent management, they're going to stay at your organization, and they get better exposure internally because now they're the face of training internally, as opposed to hiring a third party training company. And the third party training companies love it because they don't have to deal with the headache of training trainers and scheduling them and delivering them in unscalable, like, one-off events. Now they can sit back and enjoy SaaS margins without, you know, they're just become like the IP. Mm-hmm. So we become the delivery platform and the client implements it. Everybody wins.
You might be surprised to know that not all serial killers are straight cisgender white men, and the victims of true crime are not a monolith either. She's Wendy and I'm Beth, and together we host Fruit Loop's Serial Killers of Color, a true crime podcast.
Together we take deep dives into the true crime stories about marginalized and minoritized perps and victims that often go untold.
We also provide the context and nuance that these stories deserve. At Fruit Loops, we're serving up true crime with a side of history, society, culture, and some fun.
Listen to Fruit Loop Serial Killers of Color on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's so cool.
I did just hear that Bruce Willis was the first person to actually, like, sell his image and likeness to one of those deep fake companies, like, that he now is going to be trying to get out of the tower forever for the rest of our lives. There's going to be 75 more of those movies.
Unnecessary. But thanks.
That'll be perfect. Natalie, the way that we like to end our episodes is by, you know, sharing one thing that we want to make sure that our listeners hear and take away from this episode. And so I want you to share that and also your contact info.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I feel like I've been, like, talking the whole time. I feel like this
No.
Listen, hey. We talk all the time. That's why we have guests. Nobody wants to hear us anymore, Natalie.
Yeah. So, you know, first thing that comes to mind when you ask that is, you know, I just, you know, I always say that, you know, representation matters, right? And I feel like that's what we are doing today. And, you know, annoyingly, that's what I have to do, like, every day. Like, when I go to the grocery store, it's like, hashtag representation matters. Like, I'm here. But, you know, it requires, you know, visibility and it requires intentionality to bring these stories to the world and it, you know, at scale, but also in the local grocery store. Like, and so I just want to thank you all for that. And I think just for everybody that's listening, like, that is something that you can go do immediately. You know, you don't have to implement technology like ours. And I meant to plug All Voices earlier. That's another great, you know, anonymous, like, reporting technology. Like, you can bring in technologies to help change culture in the organization, but, like, representation is, like, that's going to start the process. And you don't have to, you could bring in outsiders, you know, to, you know, ERGs. One of the coolest things I've seen ERGs start doing is hiring outside advisors, right? So they're not part of the company. So it's like, you know, each ERG has an outside advisor. They're paid, but their job is to help start to create representation inside that organization for that identity, whatever that is. And, you know, that it makes a difference. So, you know, thank you for letting me represent today and representing the trans community and at least, you know, being able to share my story. There's hundreds of thousands, millions of stories out there that are better than mine and more authentic. And not that I wouldn't judge authenticity, but you know, I would say that in a lot of ways that are more important than mine. I mean, I just happen to be.
You have to come back, and we've been just like, I don't know. Are we just getting older? Are we just more engaged? I don't know. We keep having to bring people back because we're like, wait, more questions, more things to talk about. Yeah, I mean,
talk about always.
Bring me back and I'll shut up. I know you're trying to shut me up, but
I want to
thank everybody for the opportunity to be here. My contact information, if you'd love to, I'd love to continue the conversation. You can find me on social media, mostly LinkedIn and Instagram, kind of my two platforms, but at Natalie J. Egan is how you can find me out there. And then you can email me directly, natalie@translator.company. So it's C-O-M-P-A-N-Y. So it's translator.company. So you can email me directly, and you can also find our website, www.translator.company. And Katie and Jackie, it's such an honor and a privilege to be here with you all and see your beautiful smiling faces. And I look forward to future conversations and collaborations.
Absolutely. Yeah, Jackie, what's your one thing?
I just love that Natalie talked about, I mean, we've been saying it forever. And I mean, we all have similar goals in trying to make the world a better place, right? But that it has to be baked into everything, right? Inclusion has to be baked into everything.
You stole mine.
If you would ever go first, then I could steal yours. But I mean, just, you know, I was looking at an article and it said top 10 places to live. And I was like, for white people, like, you, what lens were you going through? Like, for people with kids, you know, I'm like, this is not, I'm like, oh, I should live there. Wait, I ain't moving to Maine. Are you nuts? Like,
I would love to see a top 10 places for trans people to live, or a top 10 places for people with disabilities, or top 10. You're so right about that, Jackie. That's just like,
can we do that? Like, we should. Top 10 as chosen by Katie, Jackie, and Natalie.
Right.
And then we'll just tell them our lenses, and then they do with this what you will.
Yes.
It's such a huge, like, glaring gap and omission. It's like, yeah, for white people.
For white people.
Because you could be putting people in danger. Right? Totally. Like, yes. Oh, move here. Like, I guarantee if Waco, Texas was on the list, I would have to move out. Because it was by, like, I don't know, good housekeeping. It was like one of those. I know I'm not supposed to.
I feel like Waco has turned into the top 10. It's Chip and Joanna's fault, but
trust
it's all good.
Me.
Okay. Yeah. So mine is also just the whole, like, hey, weaving DEI through every training, not just the DEI training, is such a big piece. But I think also what you talked about, Natalie, of just the representation, and not just the representation, but when you start doing these small things of using pronouns, talking about some of these things, having trainings that are inclusive and are safe and are all of these things, it's the, you know, if you build it, they will come. If you start to have these conversations and invite people to join the conversation, that's when the recruiting shifts. That's when some of these other things happen. And I think it's just, it's a domino effect. And, you know, I've seen it happen when people start ERGs and organizations, that it's like folks come out of the woodwork. Oh yeah, I'm part of that group too. Or, oh yes, I identify as this as well. And you're like, who would have known? We didn't know that, you know, those folks were in on the team or a part of the team because they didn't feel safe sharing that. So I think just, you know, that, you know, whole idea of representation and also creating spaces where folks can show up as themselves is huge.
Yeah, all right. You can't see it, you can't be it. And one other thing, just real quick, just reminded me back to the ESG stuff. This is a metric, again, that we can't take a full responsibility for, but because of the nature and the scale of our platform and how we can impact entire companies, one of the really interesting metrics that is being reported up is, you know, I think for clients that have been using our platform for more than a year, the full platform for more than a year, there's 62% reporting an increase in diversity in their leadership team. And it's not that their leadership team has grown in a year or changed dramatically. It's exactly what you just said. It's that they feel more comfortable coming out and identifying in ways, they're disclosing things they weren't disclosing before. So it's actually like an organic boost to your diversity metrics with your existing teams. And, you know, that counts. Like that is, I mean, yes, we need to do other things, but like it does count. And so, yeah, if you can't see, you can't be it. So if you're not creating that representation, then people can't come out.
Right.
You can't, you know, so anyways.
Thank you for adding that. I love it. I love it. All right, Jackie, you want to close us out?
No, I always forget. You know, okay. I don't know how.
Well, this is Katie Van Horn. That's Jackie Clayton. We're done now. This has been the Inclusive AF podcast. Bye.
Bye.
Do you love news about LinkedIn, Indeed, Google, and just about every other recruitment tech company out there?
Hell yeah. I'm Chad.
I'm Cheese.
We're the Chad and Cheese Podcast.
All the latest recruiting news and insights are on our show.
Dripping in snark and attitude.
Subscribe today wherever you listen to your podcasts.
We out.